Welcome to Wolfpack Women. I'm Denise.
And I'm Susie.
And today we have Jenna, that nurse who asked questions on Instagram. And I spotted her a few months back, actually, after I saw one of her posts that was shared of her walking to London. She'd written a letter to Boris Johnson about lockdowns. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I need to speak to this lady. So welcome, Jenna. How are you doing?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
No, thank you so much, because I know how busy you are. It's been a while to try and get you on the show. And you are starting a 50-day walk today.
Well, I started on Saturday.
Oh, on Saturday, okay.
Yeah, I'm clocking up those miles as well.
So what is the 50-day walk in aid of?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I walked to London, so that was 151 miles, and that took me 10 days with an average of 15 miles a day. But there was quite a lot of back and to and travel that were taking up a lot of the time during that day. I wanted to hand deliver a letter to Boris Johnson just to raise some concerns and about the things that were being reported to me within health and social care. And I got to London and they wouldn't take the letter, so I had to post it anyway. But what I did manage to do was to create what I call my gram fam, where people were like, oh, I feel like that too. I've been confused and not really knowing where to go. So depending how you define success would be, you know, did I hand deliver the letter? No, I didn't. I posted it. But I would define my success as being able to create this kind of like community on Instagram, which wasn't what I set out to do, but was the end result. And it didn't feel enough. It didn't feel enough. It didn't feel like that message had got out there. That, you know, I say nurses because that's what I am, but there are services. So there are policemen, firemen, and paramedics, counsellors, social workers who are all struggling and reporting various things to me, you know, working in lots of different kind of clinic settings and work environments. So what I decided to do was get my message across as best as I can, and with my kind of strength is talking and walking. So that's when I decided to get a sandwich board, partly because when I had my sign up, it really hurt my arm. So that was, I guess, being a little bit lazy of me as well. So having my sandwich board, and it's just a way that I can get my message across. People who want to speak to me can. So far, it's day, I don't know what day it is now. So Saturday, Sunday, is it Monday today? Tuesday?
No, Monday. It's Tuesday.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday, yeah. Yeah, so day four, and people have stopped and they've asked questions and you know, being very polite. So what I'm doing now is a 50-day walk. So the idea is I walk 1,000 miles, so an average about 20 miles a day over the 50 days. And about halfway, I'm going to be asking the servicemen and women who are struggling to meet me for a walk. So I'll walk for the whole time, but I'm asking them for the time on the 12th of May. And that'll be a walk of unity to show that, like, to show our faces, because we shouldn't have anything to be ashamed of. Like, nobody that I've spoken to has been aggressive. They've been confused, because from university, we are taught, ask questions, find out about the rationale, you know, follow the money with research, consider conflict of interest, have a look at different types of evidence, look at peer review, debate. And then I'm speaking for myself, I'm quite confused, because, you know, that's what we were taught, and now we're told no. And thousands of nurses have messaged me reporting similar things, and I don't know what else to do, to be honest. You know, I'm not a big person on the telly, or I don't know what else to do, so I'm talking and I'm walking.
I mean, you're creating a movement. And that's clear. And these things take time, I guess, and momentum. And you know, you just have to do what feels right for you. Because we all have that inner guidance that we have to listen to. Because if you didn't do it, even though it's sending its challenges to you, you wouldn't be able to not do anything. That's going to be harder, right?
Yeah.
And so what do you expect, like what's the sort of hope, the outcome, what do you sort of envisage like in the next, like I guess 47 days and beyond that, like what do you hope to happen?
So I'm hoping, so one of there's three nurses who kind of like behind the scenes, and I call that like the organizers group. So we have group chats, and we've also got a group of it's different kind of professions, and we have a weekly Zoom where we kind of talk together and talk about what action steps we can do and also offer support to each other. I guess what I'm hoping to achieve is that change in visibility, because right now we're all kind of like undercover. We're undercover. We're in these groups, we're having these conversations, we're not talking to our managers, we're not talking to our colleagues, because we are fearful of being bashed down. And I say we, because I feel like the people who I talk to, like this is what they are telling me. I'm in a very fortunate position. I'm not experiencing this bullying, but I have previously. So I think what we need to do now is become visible and show the world that we are scared to talk, and we need to talk about this, and we're not there to challenge, we're just there to kind of like get it straight in our heads. And to me, questions shouldn't cause conflict, because if the answer is that clear, then it should just be a conversation, but maybe the method of communication needs to change. So maybe it just needs to be told in a different way. Or maybe I need a leaflet, or maybe I need an animation or something to explain it to me. But my concern is that it's causing conflict, because the person that we're trying to speak to, when the ones that are having conversations don't know the answer themselves, so then they project an anger onto the person, so they shut up. So there's a lot of people that are confused right now and don't really know where to go. So I guess by me being visible in quite a busy city, it's those people that are walking past that are within their family units or work kind of groups, and it doesn't feel right, something doesn't feel right, but everyone else around them is saying you're an idiot, or you've got mental health problems, or you're unhinged, or you're a conspiracy theorist. When you've got a whole group of people around you that say that, if I can walk past someone who's feeling a little bit confused, and they can say, more people are thinking like me. So it's that awareness and that kind of like, I guess, a hub where to go, so that it is okay to ask questions. And I wanted to create on Instagram, you know, any comments of abuse or kind of like, you know, ones that I see that are shouting and swearing, I don't like that. And I did a video about the boundaries that I set on the page. And I just wanted to create a safe space for people who are unsure about what's going on and don't know where to go.
Yeah, there's, I don't know how, if you were this surprised, but for me, for the first like couple of months, and seeing people and the way that they were so obedient, and then they were also not questioning anything, that was like a massive trigger for me. And I still don't understand why people don't question anything. And when you question anything, then it's like your theories are dangerous. And that's what I got. So where do we go from here? Like, where do you see it? Cause this is something that me and Susie talk about a lot, where we struggle with understanding. And I guess there's certain people we're just not gonna get through to. And it's the people that are like, what? This doesn't feel right. And for you,
I think people feel quite vulnerable when they ask questions, because people are slamming them down before anything. And we're always saying that you need to ask questions. If something doesn't feel right, if something doesn't, just ask questions. But it's like, you know, like people just are too afraid to ask because they may have said something and then they felt that shut down. And you know how you feel when you shut down? You just feel scared. You're just full of fear, thinking, well, I can't really say anything because nobody's going with me. We want somebody to be with us, don't we? We want some support around us to say, yeah, you're on the right track. Keep doing it, keep doing it. So it gets really scary when everybody's agreeing with you, you feel, but nobody's standing with you or nobody's wanting to participate. Or you ask the questions. You feel like a bit of a scapegoat, don't you? You feel like, you know.
I mean, people have spoken out. You know, I'm not NHS and I say that in my videos, not every single one, but I've got it on like my Instagram handle. And the reason why I say that is because I think the public's opinion right now or perception is that we are NHS, like all nurses are NHS, because that's what we've been told for over a year now, when there are many that aren't. But I get slammed for saying that as well. Like, you know, even though I did it so I didn't deceive anyone, I get slammed saying, well, that's not a get out of jail card. But my point being that there are nurses speaking out, there are other nurses speaking out, but I think there needs to be that unity, and we need to come together, and it needs to be physical. It needs to be a show of unity, because it's amazing the amount of stories that people have shared with me and the amount of encouragement that people have shared with me. And that is what's kept me going till now. But now it needs to be that show of unity. And like, you know, shoulder to shoulder, this is how we feel. Because it's very easy to say things about me that aren't true or aren't nice. But if there's 50, 100, 200, you know, it's a little bit more difficult then. You know, I saw some of the comments where somebody said, oh, it's great to see nurses speaking out. And then, you know, the comments were, oh, anyone can buy a uniform, they're fake nurses, they're crisis actors. And then somebody else had commented saying, oh, many of them weren't in uniforms. And then they got criticised for not being in uniforms. And it's like, well, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You're just like in that double bind where you just can't win. So for me, it's about just a show. I'm not encouraging people to wear the uniforms, like, because there's trusts on them and there's all sorts of issues. But just that show that we're all nurses, we're all police officers, firemen, social workers, we're all professionals, and we've all got questions.
When did you start asking questions? When did it feel like this isn't right?
Last year, I was actually heading to India from March till July. That was like my break of not being responsible for anyone else. I was just going to like look after me. And I got to Delhi. I think it was like the 5th of March that I flew. And I don't watch the news. I don't listen to the radio. But I was aware through conversations and things. And I wore a mask on the plane because I thought it was going to make other people feel better. It didn't make any sense to me because the gaps were too big, and I was going to take it off to eat and drink anyway. So it didn't make sense, but I thought, you know, people feel better.
Is that the rules then? Like, to wear a mask on the plane?
Honestly, I can't remember. I don't think it was. I think it was kind of almost like a collective group, you know, people were wearing them. And because I was going to India, I'd taken some supplies, and it was a time when you couldn't get alcohol gel or disinfectant wipes, and everyone had just gone bananas buying all this stuff. So I got to India, I did wear the mask, and again, that was a little bit more for other people, and because of the language barrier as well. So the default was, I'll wear it. And then every morning the cricket was on the telly. And then the last 72 hours that I was there, it was the news that was on the telly. And the attitude towards me changed completely because I appear different. You know, I look different to everybody else. People started to be quite hostile towards me, quite suspicious and paranoid about me. And then the airports were closing. So I had a project that I was finishing. And my husband wanted me to come home. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I can come home. I finish this project on Monday. Otherwise, it'll feel like this is a waste of time, me being here if I've not completed it. And then they said about the airports closing. So we were like scrapping, trying to get a flight home. And it went from £300 to £1,800, like before I'd even got to the checkout. So I didn't get that flight. I got like the next one. And yeah, you know, again, put the mask on. Everyone was confused. There wasn't really a lot of information, didn't know what was happening. And then when I got home, it was like the last night of the pubs when everyone, you know, could go out and have a drink, and didn't wear the mask. The masks were asked. We went to the circus during one of the lockdown, first lockdown breaks. So I wore the mask. And again, I didn't understand it because of like the gaps and the virus particles being so small. But for other people, you know, I want to try and make you feel better. And then I was at the circus, and this is really tragic, but our tickets, my friend's husband had got the ticket, so we were just waiting, and I'm quite tall, so I kind of like stood like with my knee down, so I was a little bit, you know, slopey, and I kept on looking around to see whether I was in anyone's vision, and I didn't realise there was two chairs like behind me, and it was like a cinema style like chairs, and I didn't realise there was two at the top of the seat. So as I'm trying to crouch down, and the show hadn't started yet, but a woman ran down the stairs and pushed me three times, you know, in the name of COVID, in the name of social distance. I was in her way. She couldn't possibly have just had a conversation and let me know. So that kind of like shocked me because I've never, that's not happened to me before. So I was a little bit shocked. And the circus guy took us to our seats, which wasn't close to this woman, but took us to her seats. And we were like one seat apart from the next group. So you had to be one seat apart from whoever you were with. And there was like bands on the seat. So he picked up like one, two, three, there's your seats, sat down, a little bit like confused about what had just happened. And then the woman next to me goes, "You're supposed to be two seats apart." I was like, whoa. You know, and you're kind of enclosed in your little like stall seats, and it was dark and I'd just been pushed. And I was like, "You just saw the guy sit me down. Like, you didn't say anything to him. I don't know where I'm sat." She's like, "I'm not shouting at you." "Well, you look like you are and you sound like you are." So then I sat, this is tragic, I sat at the circus and I put my little mask over my eyes and I fluffed my hair and I cried. And I did not want to be there at all. So after that, I decided that I cannot try and make people feel better because it's just a way of dehumanizing people. It's easy to shout at people when they become faceless. And for a time, people just avoided me in the shops. And I quite liked that because they weren't getting close to me. So they actually were socially distanced from me. And then when I saw the SAGE documents, me and my husband were talking, he's the numbers guy, you know, he's the statistics, he looks at the percentages and all that stuff. And I'm more the behaviour and communication. And we saw the SAGE document, which was about increased adherence to social distancing, and about the emotional messaging and the changing of the message from "my mask doesn't protect me, my mask protects you." And then I saw the Ofcom guidelines, which, you know, anything, any other evidence that appeared, we weren't allowed to say because this is what public health was saying. And then there was the NHS document about the do's and don'ts of the vaccine uptake, which was, which appeared to me like a coercion, a document to coerce people. And it spoke more about the behaviour and the communication rather than the health benefits. And seeing all of those things, it just made me think this is not right. We are not talking about health here. We are talking about changing people's behaviour. You know, and recently about the vaccine uptake, which is, you know, go on holiday. Well, you're not telling me about the benefits to my health. You're putting temptation in front of me. So yeah, then me and my husband spoke about the concerns, you know, the backlash that might be of me speaking out and asking questions. which sounds ridiculous. Like, how is that not, how can we not just ask questions? But anyway, I'm not really sure when we started to self-censor. So because at that time before Christmas, Boris was saying, Easter, 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 all your dreams will come true by Easter. We agreed that if it wasn't sorted by Easter, that's when I would start doing something or speaking out. And then before then, it was a week before I started to walk to London, Matt Hancock made an announcement. I can't really remember what it was, but it's almost like the pressure increased again. And it was like, Rob, this isn't happening. Like, this is a pattern. You know, every time we're coming out, there's a new variant, and then there's this, and then there's that. And there's just a pattern merging. You know, I can't wait till Easter now. So that's when I walked to London, because I just didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I like the whole thing has blown my mind, where logic, and like you said, you aren't allowed to question anything. We had one of my husband's friends stay here over the weekend, and he is so petrified of catching COVID that he literally was crying. That's how scared he was. And but his fear was already there before this all happened. I mean, he was scared to even go for an interview or do anything career-wise. So for me, that fear already existed, but now there's a bogeyman. And so there's something to project that fear onto and go, you know what, this is the reason why I'm scared, and this is real. So it just shows you how bad mental health, I guess, was before. Because for me, things haven't changed. The virus is still 99.9% like survivable. They're telling you to take a vaccine, that they're telling you that you can still pass it on and still get it. How are people not seeing this? This is what kind of is kind of almost dumbfounding. Like, I don't understand. And yeah, it's so shocking that I don't even know where to start. How do you deal with that? Like, is it just the walking and talking about it? Do you feel like asking the questions is making people think? Like, what do you feel?
So I was really quite lost. So my plan in India changed completely. You know, I'd had a set out what I was going to do, what I was wanting to achieve, and then I came back, and that hadn't happened. And I was really lost, and I felt like I didn't have a purpose, didn't have a and I didn't feel useful. And when I walked to London, people were then talking about the supermarket. So then I did a Rate My Shop, where I was talking about the supermarket shops, because there was so much fear. People haven't been in the shop for a year. You know, there was a lady who I spoke to who this might be a trigger for some people, but she got raped six weeks, I think it was, or it might have been 6 months, but I think it was 6 weeks before lockdown. And then she had to go through that on her own, you know, dealing with all that. The services were shut down, you know, having connection with family and friends. And to her, going into a supermarket and someone forcing, you know, because that's what she feels like, this is being forced on me, takes her right back. And so that's why I felt like I needed to talk about supermarkets, because people are having this problem. So I will talk about this problem and try and help other people. And that makes me feel useful. It does. And I talk about my videos, like, you know, whether that's selfish or not, I feel good about that. And I feel like I'm doing something. And I think, you know, being out there, it does give some people comfort that there are other people out there that are talking. But the reason for the meet right now is because I need a little bit of comfort as well. I need someone to support me and to be there for me. So yeah, it helps me feeling useful, helping people, because that's what I do. Like, that's what I'm built for. You know, I'm not an intensive care nurse. I'm not an A&E nurse. You know, I'm not one of those nurses, and I'm certainly not qualified to work on those areas. But helping people is me. That's what I do. So when that was taken away from me because of the isolation, yeah, I struggled without a purpose, whereas it feels like I have a purpose now.
Yeah, I mean, purpose is so important. And I feel like everyone in this moment that is here, they have a purpose in this they're either finding it or they found it or they're working through it, whatever it is. And even I do feel that people that are maybe against the, you know, that don't think like us, that is their purpose as well, like to show that resistance, to maybe, you know, I use this example actually, where there was that Polish doctor who was like, anyone that doesn't take the vaccine is stupid, blah, blah, blah. And he's got a big following. And then he took the vaccine and died the next day. Like, I feel like his sole purpose was to wake people up just by his actions. How do you feel in terms of like the spiritual aspects? Because we talk about that a lot in this podcast, like soul journey and purpose. And I know we were talking about it before we started recording about, you know, what you're here to do, but can you elaborate a bit more on that? Like what emotional struggles that you've been through in order to get to where you are? Because it feels like wherever you are now, in the next year, you're going to be in such a stronger standing. And every, I guess, every month you're getting stronger and stronger. Do you feel that within yourself?
Yeah, so it feels, so I talk a lot about, you know, difficult conversations, being in your comfort zone, because a lot of people right now are feared of conflict and they're not wanting to ask questions due to conflict. And I'm completely pro-choice, completely informed consent and voluntary consent. So I'm not telling people not to have it. I'm not encouraging or discouraging, but I am very much encouraging informed voluntary decision making, where they've got all the information without the coercion and the bullying or the threat of job loss and things like that. And I feel like every lesson that I've learned has brought me to here. So, you know, being bullied at school, that was a really difficult time. And very much I felt on my own with a lack of support from friends and occasionally from family members. That helped me a lot, although, you know, it was a really painful time. And walking and talking, you know, I've always kind of like spoken to strangers and, you know, getting served in the restaurant and things, you know, I've always gone out of my way to speak and make that waitress feel like she's seen, and not just taking my order and it's just a thankless task, and in the supermarket speaking to people. And, you know, relationships, you know, I've been in some not very nice relationships that have confused me. I was in a relationship with a narcissist that was only for 5 months. It took me a year afterwards to kind of shake him off. And that helped me build resilience. It helped me be aware of the confusion and the manipulation. I was in a relationship where I had quite a lot to lose, and I did lose quite a bit. And that was the first time I'd ever said, no, I'm standing up for myself here. Because I always used to say, oh, well, you know, if they take advantage of me, it says more about them than it does about me, you know, whereas that was a time when I was like, no, I worked for this and I'm going to continue to work for this. And that's helped me. And getting that confidence, removing that self-doubt, because I felt like I've been surrounded by people who have always said, I'm wrong. You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. You think differently, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And I've always been really confused, like, but it feels right. It feels like I'm right. And I'm not saying that your way is wrong. I'm just saying, like, our ways are different. And I never really understood why that wasn't a thing, why that wasn't okay. So I spent a lot of time being quite confused myself. And I feel like doing a lot of work on myself, going to counselling. I'd love to say, oh, yeah, I do meditation, yoga. I don't, you know, I'm trying. I've brought my yoga mat with me. But, you know, complementary therapies and taking time for myself. And it just feels like all of that has got me to here. And I'm in a strange city on my own, not with my husband, not with my dogs. I might start crying, but I'm okay. But I feel okay. Like, I feel okay walking the streets of London with my sandwich board. Like, I'm not saying it's easy, but there's some comfort in there that it's okay. and that this is what I should be doing.
I guess that's walking and talking your truth, and that's what I admire about you. I truly do. I've got my hand on my heart thinking what an amazing, amazing person you are. And I love how you're saying that you're doing this. You know, you'll be missing your husband and your dogs and whatever, but that's pure God. That's pure truth, what you've just said. You're walking and talking your truth.
Well, part of the six C's of nursing, one of them is courage. And, you know, when I'm speaking to junior members of staff or training staff, you have got to show courage, because, and that's not me saying like, oh, I'm amazing and I'm so brave and I'm so different to everybody else. Like, I'm just saying it's difficult saying like an unpopular opinion. Or it's difficult to ask questions when everyone around you is doing. And but the thing with courage is you're doing it because the motivation is the right thing. It would be so much easier for me to go home, to bury my head in the sand, not to do any of this, not to put myself out there for the negativity that I get. It would be so much easier to do that, but something has to be done, something has to be said, and it needs to be visible to support others. So yeah, part of the six C's of nursing, you know, you do have to have courage. And I'm not saying that it's not real. I'm not saying that people haven't worked hard. I'm not saying that there hasn't been tragedy or devastation. But what I am saying is when you focus so, so much on one tiny thing, and I don't mean to like, when I say tiny, I just mean like one virus, like there's all of this here, you know, there's all the space around where people are also suffering and also working hard and also experiencing tragedy and devastation. And they're shamed into being silenced because it's not COVID.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, but also your life experience that you're speaking about has gave you the courage to do what you're doing, like you've said all along. And that's why you had those lessons. And I think anybody that listens in totally get and understand that, because this has been your life experience to do and be. And we are all here to serve others, whether we like it or not. That is the best. I mean, it motivates me to do that. And I'm sure Denise would say the same. But, you know, your experience definitely has carved the way for where you are today.
A warrior. That's what I feel like. I feel like there's so many coming out the woodwork. But like you said, there are so many that are just, you know, increase their daily dose of antidepressants and just go, oh, you're brave, you're doing really well, I'm just gonna stay where I am because I can't say anything. And I guess that's their journey to take, and you've just got to honor yours. And I think speaking your truth is so important, like Susie said, that you can be proud of yourself that is what you're doing, regardless of what anyone else thinks, regardless of the outcome, that, you know, against all adversity, against whatever was thrown your way, you still stood your ground and spoke your truth. And I think that is so, so rare these days. Yeah, hats off to you to all everything that you're doing. And me and Susie really appreciate what you're doing. And so much respect and love goes out to you. Well, what time are you leaving to do your walk today?
So I'm just gonna nip to the shop now and just grab some fruit and stuff, and then I'm heading out.
How many steps are you doing a day?
I don't know, but like I say, if I average like 4 miles an hour, 5 miles a day, 20 miles a day, because with London I was like clocking it all up, whereas I feel like there's so much change around me right now. It almost feels like another job to do, to like clock up the miles. So the plan was to walk 1,000 miles. And I think I will do that. Like, I'm almost certain I'll do that, but I'm not going to like clock it up. And I'm also continuing to walk the protest route for this week, because again, with so much change, I just feel like I need something that's familiar. I know that route, so I'm doing a couple of laps of that, and then next week I'll do somewhere different.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and speaking your truth and being who you are. We really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
We will keep championing you, Jenna. It's been speaking with you today, and you know, just keep at it, because one day it's just going to turn. Even, you know, it is going to turn. That's what I believe.
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.